This is the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that tickle the weekend fiend bone of liberty. I'm Randy England, and co-host Ben Stone advises me that he has hacked into the CIA's subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobes. So lose the tinfoil hats and know that you are free. Hi, Ben. How are you today?
Hey, Randy. Good to be on the radio with you.
I am so happy to be here on this weekend.
We should probably... We should probably also mention that Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org, BIPCOT.org.
And governments, you know who you are. So go read it if you need to.
So, we were... go ahead, Randy.
Oh, I was just going to mention that we've been talking before we got on the air. There's an article, pretty new article, a couple days old, I think, from Patrick J. Buchanan, who is, he's not a libertarian. I think he's what's called a paleo conservative. But one thing that he does believe in is that he does not like big government, and he does not, unlike all neocons, he does not like our wars. He does not like our empire. And so we have much in common with the fellow. And he wrote an article, which was also featured on LouRockwell.com, I believe it was, A Coming Era of Civil Disobedience. And his takeoff point was a recent Oklahoma Supreme Court decision, a 7-2 decision, just a state-level court, not the U.S. Supreme Court, that ordered a monument of the Ten Commandments removed from the Capitol, I assume the Capitol in Oklahoma City. And the court said that because the commandments were religious in nature and an integral part of the Jewish and Christian faiths, the court said the monument must go. But the interesting thing, and the reason for the article, is that the governor of Oklahoma simply refused to obey. Just said, no, not going to move it. And Oklahoma lawmakers apparently have filed legislation to make that official, apparently by cutting out part of the Oklahoma Constitution on which the state Supreme Court hung its hat. What do you think, Ben?
Well, Patrick Buchanan there, he makes the argument that we're going to see more and more of this kind of thing, where essentially you've got one level of government ignoring the words and the edicts of another level of government, and they're just going to go ahead and do what they feel is morally right, no matter what the other group of government does, whether the order's coming down from the federal level or whether the order's coming from a judicial against the executive branch or whatever. Pat Buchanan seems to make the argument that more and more we're going to see examples of where people, it's essentially a civil disobedience. As a matter of fact, it's what might be considered from a judicial point of view a purer form of civil disobedience than what most people think of civil disobedience. I got in a little bit of trouble a couple of years ago when I pulled out the legal law book. I don't have it in front of me, so I can't sound official, but it was the legal law definition of civil disobedience. And it doesn't mean that you're trying to eliminate law or eliminate government or eliminate authority. It literally means that you are intentionally breaking a specific law to fight against that one law and get it changed. So you're not... It's not anti-American, or it's not anti-government, or it's not anti-authority. It's specifically targeting a law, and that's kind of what we see there in that situation with Oklahoma.
Well, in the article, Pat Buchanan says, certainly Americans are no strangers to lawbreaking. What else was our revolution but a rebellion to overthrow the centuries-old rule and law of king and parliament and establish our own? And he goes on and talks about other places where the U.S. Supreme Court decisions actually were defied. Once it was defied by Thomas Jefferson, who I'm sure most people have heard of the Alien and Sedition Acts, which were in place when Jefferson became president, and those had been used to silence critics of the government, and there were people in prison at the time Jefferson took office for committing crimes under the Sedition Act, and Jefferson immediately released them upon taking office and just threw it and declared the law as a dead letter, and all totally defying the U.S. Supreme Court and saying, I'm letting them out, and we're not going to enforce it, and that's the end of that. And that was one instance. There were other instances of defying, say, the Dred Scott decision, the Fugitive Slave Acts and things. Civil disobedience has a long history in the United States and certainly in other places.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he mentions in the article John Brown. And, you know, if we, it's really hard to look at the true history of John Brown and the activities that were going on, especially in Kansas at the time and across the border there into Missouri. It's really difficult to look at that in our eyes of today and call John Brown anything other than a terrorist. I mean, he used terror tactics. He used combat tactics. He, you know, his whole goal, as a matter of fact, in attacking the military depot there that he went to, was to steal enough guns from the government, from the state of Virginia, if I recall, to take them into the South and then distribute them to slaves to try to get a slave uprising. So, you know, from any modern day equivalent, that was just an outright act of terrorism. And of course, it cost John Brown his life, and along with his co-conspirators, I believe.
Right, and Brown was also, even before Harper's Ferry, he committed what would be considered violent terrorist acts back in the Midwest before he came to Virginia. Even before that, there had been a war going on between people in Missouri and Kansas long before Harper's Ferry. But nowadays, though, we think of something else with civil disobedience. Of course, there's a lot of time has gone by since the days of John Brown, but you have Tolstoy, who is a complete pacifist. You had Gandhi, and their examples of civil disobedience, of course, are very different than John Brown. It's more of a passive. It's not a, I don't know that, I mean, John Brown was civilly disobedient, but he went beyond civil disobedience to initiating violence even when no one was attacking him. But, and of course, for myself, I mean, I can't go with initiating violence in any situation, whatever.
Right.
I don't know where I would draw a line, where I would defend myself, but I certainly am not going to be firing the first shot when I'm not being attacked by someone else. But still, the issue of the thing in Oklahoma, that one with the Ten Commandments, that was apparently there's not going to be any violence there, mainly because I assume that the Supreme Court of Oklahoma doesn't have an army, and if it has a police force, it probably does not extend over to the Capitol. I know here in Missouri, all of the state buildings and that are guarded by the Capitol Police, and I think that the Supreme Court across the street from the Capitol, I think that the Capitol Police have jurisdiction there, and they have a few of their own marshals, but I don't think they have what would be needed to enforce their own laws. And so if the governor says, I won't enforce it, the only thing that could happen, I suppose, is that maybe you can impeach the governor, depending on what the rules are in the state of Oklahoma. But the one thing that I wonder about civil disobedience, first of all, if you know, we reject the initiation of violence, then we're not going to be doing a John Brown.
Right.
But there are other levels where there's just a passive disobedience. Maybe they're telling you to do something and you're just saying, I won't do it. Or maybe your conscience tells you you must do something that's not violent, and they're telling you you must not do it. And you have, that level is what I'm talking about, and I think certainly can be legitimate in certain cases. But also the question that I run into a lot, and that is there's levels of civil disobedience in terms of what law is. I must just say unjust toward you, and you say, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. I'm going to do civil disobedience. And that's one level of law. And maybe you just don't like it. But, is it worth it doing civil disobedience in that case? But you can kind of take it at different levels. Like there'd be laws that would force an individual to pay for things that go against, not say go against his conscience, but go against his own judgment. Say you're needing to pay the taxes to put in a road somewhere. And you think it's a dumb road, and you wouldn't put it there if it was up to you. So civil disobedience, is that legitimate to violate a law that you just don't happen to like, maybe because of where you live or some other reason? So, what do you think of a reason like that, Ben?
Well, of course, primarily, if it's striking your conscience, then you have to go with it. But I have an extreme
point
of view.
That's one more level.
Yeah, exactly. But I have an extreme point of view on that, in the sense that, I view all taxation as theft. So so maybe that's not the best example for me on that one. But I can, I can also see where, maybe without taking it to a violent level, somebody just says, you know what, the worst that's going to happen is they're going to fine me, or they're going to ticket me, or they're going to, arrest me overnight. Like I believe it was Henry David Thoreau spent a little bit of time in jail because he wouldn't pay the war tax at the time. And I think that that's very useful in many circumstances. We'll be back, though, right after this trip to the market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. So we were talking about the levels of disobedience and the levels of how it strikes you as to whether or not it's your conscience. You said you were thinking of two levels of disobedience in reference to a person's conscience. What were you thinking of there?
Well, that I was thinking. You said. Well, I begin to feel like you want to bring this discussion or civil disobedience to bear when you reach a point where a law goes against your conscience. And for example, a law that would do that, I think you mentioned taxes, a law that would force you, say, to pay for things, not that you don't just like, but pay for things that go against your own conscience, like to pay for soldiers to kill people that you have no problem with.
Yeah.
That would be a good example of that. Or to pay the sheriff's salary to go and hurt people who you have no problem with, to go and take their house or things like that. And that's a level where you're having to pay for stuff that goes against your conscience, but you're not having to actually do the things that go against your conscience. And you may not be voting. You may be completely disagreeing, agreeing that the sheriff would go and do this thing to another person. It's not like you've done anything voluntarily at all, but you might say, look, you stop stealing from me to do these bad things.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, you seem to have a better argument, but there's another level beyond that that I don't think any of us can, how should I put it? We can talk about whether we do civil disobedience to against our taxes or to pay for things that go against our judgment. But when it reaches a level where the law forces the individual to act
right
against his own conscience, in my view, there is no discussion about civil disobedience, whether you should do it or not. You simply must do it. End of argument. Am I putting that too bluntly or not?
I don't think so. For a person who actually has hard morals, you know, because really, and I distinguish it like that because you really and truly, you either have morals or you don't. There's an old joke that's inappropriate for radio where the man approaches a woman and makes an offer for her for adult services, and it's like $1 million. And she thinks it over for a minute, and she thinks, well, you know, I hate to do that. That's a horrible thing, but okay. And then he says, well, how about for $20? And she says, you know, what kind of a cheap so-and-so do you think I am? And he said, well, we already determined what you are. Now we're just determining the price. And morals are like that. I tried to keep that as radio-friendly as possible, but morals are like that. If you have morals, then you cannot just toss them to the side because it's inconvenient. You, like you're saying there, Randy, you have to stand up and say, no, I cannot, of a good conscience, in good faith, act in doing this thing that I'm being forced to do. I can't do it. So, you know, an example of that might be for somebody, let's say somebody is that sheriff that we're talking about. That's their job. They work for the sheriff's office or maybe a deputy or whatever. And the sheriff comes to them and says, look, you know, today you got to go and throw this guy out of his house because he didn't pay his, dog license fee or something. And it escalated to the point and now where we have to throw him out of his house. And can you, not you, Randy, but this theoretical person, can you have a good conscience go and basically throw that guy out of his house because he didn't have dog tags and didn't fill out the proper paperwork quick enough, and the thing escalated until the point where the city's taken his house or the county or whatever? Well, now you're being forced to act on something that you may not consciously be comfortable with. And I think that's really where the rubber meets the road. You can't. You just can't do it. Whether that's, like I mentioned, Thoreau, he just could not actively support that tax, but he wasn't being asked to do anything other than pay money. He wasn't being, you know, nobody was shoving a gun in his hand and saying, go out there and kill. He just didn't want to support it. But it's even more so when you're in that situation where they're actively telling you, you know, no, you have to bake this cake, or you have to, you know, do this, or you have to do that. And that person then is stuck with, you know, what do I do? Are my morals of any value at all? Because if they are of any value, I cannot act. I cannot do that thing.
Well, we're going to have to continue with this after the break. Let's go to the market. We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
So, Randy.
Well, we're back.
We're back.
We are back. And Ben, I think you were talking about, you know, an instance where if it violated the conscience of a deputy sheriff to go out and throw someone out of their house, that they should probably refuse. And I'm not sure if they would refuse that. That was the situation that I was in for many years when I was a prosecuting attorney. And I prosecuted people for possession of controlled substances. And it took a long time, but I began to feel that that was, first, I began to feel that it was useless and stupid and not doing any good at all. And then I also began to feel that perhaps it was wrong. And I quit. You know, when I think about that, obviously, I shouldn't have been doing it. The other way, you do something, you have to do something about it. And I would not have, in that situation, this is kind of like the deputy sheriff, I don't think I would have refused, but I did the other thing. I quit.
Yeah.
And I would think either one of those would be a viable option. Matter of fact, probably, I think, in an employment situation, well, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I guess there could be situations where you could refuse. I remember one time I won't even go into the issue, but I had a job when I worked in the restaurant business, and the company was collecting for some money for something that I thought from customers, something that I thought was very morally dubious. And I came and complained, and I said, I think this is silly for us to be doing this, and I think we're going to lose. And I thought it was maybe 50-50 that I would get fired, but fortunately they agreed with me and stopped the practice. But I didn't bother doing that when I was a prosecutor. I doubt that I could have simply refused. I mean, maybe, you know, you could get reassigned to do something else. But I was never in a situation where that was a possibility.
I used to...
What do you think?
I used to work in for a water company, and this was in eastern Ohio years and years ago. It was a privately owned water company. But still, we had to abide by all the state regulations and so forth and federal regulations for a public service like that. So the lady who ran the thing, she was the president of the company. She didn't actually own the water. She didn't own the water company, but she was the president of the company. And she was a real left-wing, kind of out there, a little bit nutty, kind of a fruitcake. I'm trying to be polite as possible, but she was nuts. And she got it into her head that putting chlorine into the drinking water was bad. And I agree, it probably is. You know, it's the only thing worse about having chlorine in drinking water is not having chlorine and then having people die of, you know, a variety of different illnesses.
Was it chlorine or fluorine? Fluoridation?
Chlorine, yeah. We didn't fluoride that treatment in that water facility. But without some kind of antibacterial agent in there, a whole water system will get polluted pretty quickly because it's almost impossible to keep it perfectly clean. So I had set up the whole process in an automated fashion so that it automatically tested the water and automatically pumped into the water the exact amount of chlorine that it was supposed to, and I had this whole process set up. And she would come down in the middle of the night and turn the whole process off. And it was her conscience was striking her that she was feeding people chlorine. Well, I was of the opinion that people know their water is chlorinated. And if we're going to be providing this service, we're doing this, you know, lawfully and everything, we cannot deceive the government and people and make them believe that we're providing, you know, chlorinated water to them when in fact we're not. So
no, absolutely not. You couldn't do that.
So I actually went in with her one day into her office, and I sat down and I told her that what I was about to do. And then I picked up the phone and I called the Ohio EPA. And because in doing this also, she was, when she would turn the system off, she would dump raw chlorine outside the pump house building as an automatic action of this process. And so she would dump 30, 40 gallons of raw chlorine, which is horribly dangerous. So I called right there from her office, from her phone. I called the EPA. I called the department in Ohio that regulates the Public Utilities Commission. I called the Public Utilities Commission, and I called the Labor Relations Board, the Federal Labor Relations Board, and turned her in right in front of her for illegal labor practices that she was doing as well, because she had people that she was paying for their overtime.
Oh, I thought maybe you were reporting your pending termination or something.
I was kind of doing that because I knew she'd fire me. So as I went through the process of making these phone calls, she got on her other phone to her attorney, made sure that she had because I was the water company superintendent and she was the president. So she got on the phone with her attorney and made sure she had the authority. And when I got done with my calls, she fired me. And I said, okay. And so that solved the problem. I didn't have to quit. She fired me. So I could then sue her for firing me unjustly because I was doing my job. Now, some people, especially, you know, people in the anarchist community might listen to that and think, well, that's not very anarchist of you to call the authorities on somebody or to litigate and sue them for firing you. But in my defense, I wasn't quite where I am. I was a libertarian then, but I wasn't a full anarchist at the time. So I didn't quite have the moral grasp that I have now. But even now, I'm not sure but what I wouldn't take those same actions now.
Well, no, and you're not living in a stateless society.
Right, right.
So if you have to take, if you feel that you have to take action to protect others from something, particularly something you've been involved in, and the only, how should I put it, effective action that you can take is to call the government water company or something, I think you have to do it, because the safety, the people are going to maybe die if you don't do this thing.
Right.
And it would only be when you got into a stateless society that your options would be different, I think.
Right.
So you would do that. I mean, I don't know what, I mean, you felt like this, that you couldn't just refuse, or if you quit, she would have kept doing it.
Right, exactly.
But did you threaten to, could you, if she had agreed at that point to stop doing it upon your threat of calling the authorities, would then you have felt justified in going ahead and calling anyway?
Well, this had gone on.
Or was the damage done and people were going to be harmed anyway?
Well, this had been going on for about a month, and she and I had been getting increasingly arguing more and more with each other about it. At first, I would confront her with what I thought, you know, somebody turned the pumps off, and she would deny it. And then I said, well, we're going to have to call the police and start getting an investigation going because somebody is messing with our chlorine pumps. And then she admitted that she was doing this. So this took place over the course of about a month. And I had warned her several times that my license was in threat because I, you know, by being the superintendent there. And so I was taking a certain amount of liability saying that this is good water and testing it every day. I had to test the water every single day. So, it was an ongoing thing. And she knew that she was putting me in a position where I had to do something.
She put you into it. Yes. Yeah. Yes. They put you, not only put you on the spot in terms of your continuing conduct, but put you on the spot if you didn't report it.
Yeah.
Because now you had knowledge, and if someone came down and got hurt by this, the noose was around your neck as well as hers.
Yeah, and I wasn't about to take liability on myself for her crazy, weirdo, left-wing beliefs. She was quite the basket case anyway.
Of course, yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure this is kind of a hybrid, because she probably knew that you were thwarting her every time you caught the levels off, right?
Yeah. She had a real problem with disconnect with reality. And I think she thought that if she just kept doing it, that I would fold eventually and let her have her way, you know.
I mean, if she thought you were wrong and you were defying her, she should have fired you. I mean, to begin with, when you said, I'm not going to do that, she should have fired you. Or when she figured, even if you didn't say that to her, when she figured out that you were subverting her, she should have fired you right away. I mean, I'd have fired you if I'd have been of her mind.
Yeah.
But she was so crazy, she didn't even do that.
No, she continually thought that she would convince me by her doing this, that I would somehow see the light.
Now, aren't there people, a certain contingent of people that believe that chlorinating water, as much as fluoride, is wrong or harmful?
Yeah, and she fit that category. But, I mean, honestly, if that's what she believes, then I would have to say, and I asked her this before, you know, well, then why are you in this business? Why is this your chosen field to be in? You know, you should first quit what you're doing and then, you know, make any kind of changes you can make through trying to influence people, not by getting as president of a water company and then altering the product that you're giving them.
Yeah, yeah. And from your point of view, you're looking at not the advisability of chlorination, but the sure knowledge that you have to do something or this water is going to become dangerous. Something you can't just leave it out. You'd have to do something else, right?
Yeah.
You said you tested the water. It got bad, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It would get bad really quickly. And you know, there are ways to have clean water without chlorination. There are processes where you use light, ultraviolet light, I believe it is, or something like that. And those processes are available. They're expensive. And I even talked to her about that. You know, if the company wants to make the investment, then it is possible to have clean water without chlorine. That's just a monetary decision you have to make. Chlorine's cheap. You know, it follows the laws that are in existence. But if you really believe that you can, you know, that you can't put out a chlorinated product, then make the investment for the other equipment, and we can do it without chlorine. Well, we'll be right back after this little trip to the market. Stick with us.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains, because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Freedom Fiend. So, Randy,
and we're back.
Rather than me ramble on about some crazy woman I used to work for, let's take it back to that article.
Yes, the Pat Buchanan article. Well, I think we were talking about the last things we were talking about was, you know, what happens when someone comes and says to you, "You must do this evil thing," and you know, pretty clear that truth is, you must not do it. And if you don't do that, if you're willing to violate your own conscience, your own morality, there's either something wrong with you, or if you have no morality, I guess there's still something wrong with you. So there aren't many people that would do that, and stay on the right side of the the non-aggression principle, surely, at least from a personal standpoint. But anyway, Pat Buchanan Ballard weren't necessarily of the I'm being ordered to do an evil act. Things like back during Prohibition, millions of Americans defied the Volstead Act and drank alcohol, and they ended up, of course, successfully bringing about the end of Prohibition. Of course, you have other examples like Rosa Parks, who she refused to give up her seat on a bus. Now, that takes us back to an even lesser level of, coercion in that. It wasn't that she was even being required to pay to do something against her own conscience. She wasn't required to do something against her own conscience, since there's nothing evil about sitting anywhere on a bus, I suppose. But she was fighting an injustice.
Right.
And that even what I consider a lower level of injustice, that is an injustice against oneself. Others are probably more worthy, and an injustice against yourself is probably lesser. You actually have the option of turning the other cheek, I suppose, when something unjust is done to you. But on the other hand, since she was caught so much trouble for it, it's pretty clear she wasn't just doing it for herself. But one could do that and say, I refuse to, sit where I'm supposed to, because not because it's unjust, but because I'm indignant at my own, this affront to me. But still, though, she's a hero for doing it, because she suffered for it. And that civil disobedience ended up with kind of kicked off the civil rights movement that did a lot of good things before it started doing a lot of bad things, such as getting into the public's wrong. Of course, discrimination laws. Here I am. I'm on the radio, and I'm thinking out loud. But I tend to despise discrimination laws that tell people that they have to serve someone they don't want to serve, and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, I totally support discrimination laws when they're enforced only against the government. It's absolutely true that the government, as long as we have a state, they must treat all of us equally.
Right.
But when it comes to individuals, they should have the right of freedom of association. I mean, if the government, the state's going to hold a gun to my head and say, you're associating with me, whether you like it or not, then certainly I have the right to whatever benefits I might have coming to me and not have to suffer any discrimination. But I don't believe in that at all, and privately, and I think that's probably where the civil rights movement jumped the tracks and started making everyone play nice and not discriminate against other people. And it, of course, expanded into insanity. It started picking up more and more categories. All of them applied to private citizens, not just to the government, and that was kind of a problem. But the civil disobedience there did start out from a good place to end an injustice, which said that in the case of Rosa Parks and that black people had to sit in a dishonored place on a public transportation. I wonder, though, I assume the bus was a city bus, run by the government or under government auspices. I wouldn't even agree that you would, if you had a bus service and it was totally private, if you were dumb enough to discriminate against, half of your customers, I still wouldn't want to bring the government in that and invoke discrimination laws. I wouldn't want to ride with them anyway if they wanted to make me ride in the back.
Right.
Who would? Hey, I think we've just finished the first hour, haven't we, Ben?
Yeah. Folks, stick with us and, through the news.
Stick with us.
We'll be back. Don't let that news get
worms.
You down. Worms.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch. Now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is Hour 2, Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's ion cannon mounted atop the Wormabago Mobile Command Module in the depths of Freedom Bayou, where revenuers dare not tread. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org, BIPCOT.org. My name is Ben Stone. With me on the Freedom Fiends is my friend Randy England. Randy, welcome back to the second hour.
That would be me. How are you, Ben?
Good. So we were talking about Rosa Parks and civil disobedience, and in case you're just joining us on the radio, we were referencing a recent article by Pat Buchanan about civil disobedience and about an Oklahoma a judicial ruling saying that they had to remove the Ten Commandments from the state capitol grounds, I believe it was, and the governor basically said, "No, we're not going to do that. We're just going to do this other thing instead." And the lawmakers are trying to adjust the state constitution to allow them to ignore that judgment. Is that about a recap?
Yeah. And we were talking about Rosa Parks and different kind of levels of civil disobedience, and I think everybody agrees that she did a good thing when she put herself on the line, sat in the back of the bus, and trying to have an unjust law, one that was oppressing people, to be repealed. And my thought is that, and we talked a little bit about the thing about acting against your own conscience, we have Rosa Parks, who was justified in her civil disobedience simply to end an unjust law that was unfair to a group of people. And I'm thinking how much more that applies when they hold the gun to your head and order you to do something that you can't do. I think in the article, I think Pat Buchanan talked about the pizza lady who said her Christian beliefs would not permit her to cater a same-sex wedding. And that person, you know, you may think that she's a bigot or not in that, but if her honest opinions, her conscience says, I cannot participate in something that I think is wrong, then is that wrong of her? I mean, if she's being civil disobedient, it could reach a point. I don't know. In most places, it probably isn't, but in some places, people are being punished for doing that exact thing. Perhaps being ordered to participate. The same sex marriage thing is, of course, in the papers so much now, and it's a big issue in our society. Although I don't think it should be any issue at all. In a stateless society, I'm not sure why the government's involved, but they are. And it's very conceivable that we're going to have a situation very soon where people are going to be punished. Well, they're already being punished, but I mean widely punished, because they won't participate in something that they disagree with. Now, I'm not talking about doing anything against someone else. I'm just saying, just leave me out of it, and maybe some people want you to not be left out of it. I'm not sure how that goes. What do you think, Ben?
You know, I always try to balance wisdom in anything that I bring in, anything that I want to think about. You know, where do I stand on this? What's my position on this? I try to bring a balance of wisdom into it, because you take the Rosa Parks situation. Now, I'm sure she had tolerated this injustice her whole life of having to ride in the back of the bus and being, people acting like she's a second class citizen or a lesser citizen just because of her, her skin color. So, we were talking about during the break. There's a phrase in the Declaration of Independence where it says, essentially, people have a tendency to put up with a lot of garbage right up to the point of where they won't put up with it anymore, and then they have to do something. And I'm sure in the case with Rosa Parks, she had just put up with it and put up with it and put up with it. But in her case, she was also deciding that she was not going to put up with it any longer, not only for herself, but for other people as well. So she took the risk of getting arrested, of getting beaten, possibly even killed. I mean, there's all, they were hanging people for lesser things at the time. So, not the government, I'm saying, there were ruffians who were doing this kind of thing. So she was taking a tremendous risk in stepping out and doing this. And so I always try to bring a balance in, and I say, all right, so is this thing that I'm against, is it worth the cost of what it's going to cost me to fight it? So if I was the pizza making person, and if I felt that I couldn't of a clear conscience cooperate and be a part of a same-sex wedding, then I would balance that and say, okay, what's it going to cost me to make this moral stand? Well, when you bring the government in and the threats of violence that the government brings with its laws, it distorts that whole decision-making process. So maybe the person with the pizza business decides not to be involved in that because they're conscious, but they might also have to say, but if the government's going to come in and they're going to fine me and they're going to force me to do this, is it worth me drawing that line in the sand and saying, no, I'm not going to do it anyway? You can take my business, you can destroy my, my finances, you can throw me in jail. And that's a really uncomfortable position that government tends to put people into. Whereas if it was just a market...
Well, if it's your...
Go ahead, Randy.
If it's your conscience, though, if it's a moral issue in your conscience... You don't have a choice.
Right.
Another really good example of some of that where you don't have a choice at all. I don't know whatever became of the case, but I know that last year there was a case that went through in Louisiana all the way to their Supreme Court. And it seemed to me it was going to be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I never heard that anything happened with it. But in Louisiana, where they were trying to force a priest to divulge the contents from the confessional.
Wow.
Where someone was thought to have gone to confession after committing allegedly committing a crime, and... I'm not sure about that, but it was thought that it would be something that could be handled, just by forcing them to do it. Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And I think it was a Catholic priest. I don't know about other. I think that other religions may also be as adamant about it, but there's no Catholic priest that would ever repeat anything that was said when somebody went to confession. It's just it could never happen. It's so unthinkable that even the most we've got some some, not everybody's the same, and we've got some priests that are into the teachings of, say, the church in some things, but that is just an unthinkable, I cannot imagine it happened that any priest would ever violate the confidentiality of the confessional, and yet they're being forced to do it. They go to jail first.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you defy a court order to testify as to the contents of, you know, what someone told you. If you don't do it, you go to jail.
Yeah.
It's contempt, but the jail cell is just the same that you're put into. And that's I don't know what's happened with that case, but that's one of those things that if it happened, if the whole country got to a point where they said, no, we're not going to do this, we're not going to allow you to have the confidentiality, the seal of confession, they call it, anymore, and when we tell you that you're going to have to tell us what we want to know, you're going to have to. And of course, it would be easy enough to enforce because the government would send fake people into confession to tell their sins, and they would confess some horrible thing, and then when the government would find out, you know, would try to get them in, it'd be pretty easy to set up a sting operation to round up and imprison all the Catholic priests for contempt. But I think that it would cause riots? There's no way that people would stand for it. Even with only the Catholics were upset about it, and I don't think we would be the only ones that would be upset about it. You know, the idea of confidentiality is in, there's many professions that it's in. And lawyers, of course, are almost always not allowed to reveal confidences that are given them. And other professions too, I guess, you know, certain therapists and doctor patient and all of those things. And, you know, it's so stupid that they would ever try to break the seal. That's just idiotic that you would try to break the lawyer, you know, lawyer client privilege or patient doctor privilege, because the reason that the privilege exists is really not to protect the priest or the doctor or the lawyer or the person that talks to them, but to get people to be straight with them, to tell them the truth.
To get the help that they need.
Because they can do their jobs. And the thing is that the first time that if it looked like priests were going to start revealing the secrets that they hear in the confessional and obey the government, well, guess what would happen?
Yeah.
There would be no secrets anymore. So the government they cannot win the fight. They could punish some people for this. They could hurt people, and they love to hurt people. But once they started doing it, and once the person who hears the secret is not supposed to give it up, starts giving it up, guess what? There's no more benefit even to the government, because there will be no more secrets told. The lawyer will not get the truth. The doctor will not get the truth about your health. And the priest won't get the truth about your sins. And so whatever purpose each of those three professions were trying to accomplish, they'll be thwarted, and the government will not get any more good information past maybe the first one or two people that they made an example of. And I just don't think it'll ever happen. I can't imagine it happening.
I have a lot of concerns about
successfully, I mean.
I have concerns about the medical industry with the new Obamacare stuff and everything. You know, the government's tentacles getting all into medical records. That's a pretty scary aspect of that thing.
I think that one's pretty well lost, because they've already decided that they're paying for all the health care, so it's all their business. I think that battle's lost.
Yeah.
But with the lawyers and the priests and some other ones, I don't think so. And I don't think it'll ever happen with the priests. Got to be too much stink come over that one.
Yep.
I think we're about to go to the market.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Hey, and we're back. This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Randy England, and I'm here with Ben Stone, and we've been talking about violating our consciences, and I hope we haven't done that during the first hour or up to now, Ben. I feel all right. But there's a priest, an Orthodox priest, I think. Not a Catholic priest, but like an Eastern Orthodox priest, I think.
Right.
A priest in the Antiochian, I can't even pronounce that, like from Antioch jurisdiction. And the fellow's name is, in light of the same-sex marriage case, it's here now, I'm almost stuck. So, Obergefell, is that the name of the case? Obergefell, I think was the fellow's name.
I wasn't even going to try
was in the Supreme Court case. But anyway, in light of that, he apparently had an attack of conscience. And as a priest, I gather that in his church, they were not going to be willing to perform same-sex marriages. But in connection with that, he had a protest, which I have tremendous respect for, and that is, why am I an agent of the state in the wedding business? He was upset because someone comes in and says, we want to get married, and he's the priest that's going to witness the marriage. And I'm sure that their church is probably as much as me. They fill it out, and the priest that did the wedding signs it, and it goes into the church records. And that's, you know, how these Christians or people in my church, too, the Catholics, you know, do it. But when they're done, there's also another little document you sign. I think in the state of Missouri, it's just the marriage license that you get.
Right.
And in Illinois, I'm not sure, but he signs a piece of paper saying, not only are you married in the eyes of the church, but I, with the authority vested in me, marry you in the eyes of the state. And he said, I'm not going to do it anymore. I will not sign those. I'm refusing from here on. I'm not going to sign marriage licenses. And I'm going, hooray, this is really great. And of course, immediately, since I'm Catholic and he's an Eastern Orthodox, I'm going, what's wrong with my Catholic priests? Where are they? You know, so I hope they're jumping on the bandwagon. It's a little early, but I would love to see that. Now, in Illinois, the state's not going to recognize it. He is basically saying you're going to have to go to the courthouse if you want to be married in the eyes of the state, but don't look to me because I won't do it. And I think that after the Obergefell, let's see, I got it again. Obergefell ruling, I noticed in my state, and you may have seen it in some other places, there were two judges in the St. Louis area, or it was reported out of St. Louis, who said, we're not going to perform any more marriages at all.
Yeah.
I think that perhaps the judges, and I don't know how it is in other states, but in the state of Missouri, a judge is not required to perform marriages. They do many times. They often do. They have the power to, but it may not be a duty that they must do. And a couple of judges down there said, well, we're not going to do them. You know, this is a real divisive issue. And in the state of Missouri, it's more divisive. Perhaps it's less divisive in California or Massachusetts, but they said, we will not do them. We're not doing any more marriages. And I'm kind of thinking, okay, well, if you want to get married and your priest at the church says, I'm not signing that stupid thing, you know. And they won't marry. If the priest won't marry you, because say it was a same-sex marriage, I know, you know, there's no Catholic church is going to perform a same-sex marriage. It's just not going to happen. And if your judge won't do it either, I wonder where that leaves it. I'm thinking they're maybe going to go back to, you know, the drawing board and pass a federal law saying that you have to. I'm not sure.
I would assume that that's the direction they'll eventually go, because once you start down this path, you know, you kind of, from a state point of view, at some point in time, you're going to have to pass a law that says, no, you know, you have to cooperate with this. And that's
you have to escalate the coercion. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
The one thing that I think that Pat Buchanan mentioned in his article is that probably the next thing, you know, that'll be on the table will be the removal of tax exemptions for churches.
Yeah.
That if you don't follow these rules, you'll lose your tax exemption. Now, for me, that's an easy decision. I'd say take your tax decision and stick it where the sun don't shine. But that's not fair, but that would be my inclination.
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. We're back. We're back from the market. And we were thinking that during the break we had there, it occurred to me, Ben, that you are also have something in common with this priest in Chicago, and that you also are an ordained minister, and you sometimes do weddings. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. I did a wedding in Missouri, actually. And you know, from thinking about this guy, he's not making this guy in Chicago is not making the case that he's not doing these because of the same-sex marriage. Hey, there's Michael. Michael Dean dropped in.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, I just, you know, I got nothing to say. I just wanted to jump in and say, sounds good. A bunch of old men talking about Pat Buchanan. Must be conservative talk radio. So I figured I'd come on. I really got to say, it sounded so good. I got nothing to add. I'm gonna jump out here in a minute. But what's up, Granny?
It's good to have a young man get on here with us. Oh no, wait. You and Ben are the same age.
Yeah. No, man, I'm not young. Yeah.
Oh well. Hey, did we mention we're talking over Fiend Phone, and it's getting the job done.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes.
I'll let you go and just spy on you and be a fly on the wall. Listen,
well, hang in there. Ben was about to make a moral... he's at a moral crossroads right now about he's going to sign those marriage licenses. And I cannot wait to hear what he's going to decide.
So. I think it depends on how many he's offered and whether they pay or not.
Oh, you mean it'll charge you quite a bit more if you want him to sign the state license, huh?
I don't know. I mean... how often does this dilemma come up, man? I'm not saying you're a sellout. I'm just saying, like, how strongly do you feel about it? And it'd be pretty easy to say no if you only get asked once every 4 years or something.
If it was
your livelihood, it'd be harder. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I started to do a wedding in Ohio. And so I had to make sure that I had all the legal things taken care of to be able to do that. And to do it, I think, if I recall, there was a $5 charge that the state charges in order to get their little stamp of approval. So I thought, all right, well, this is not such a horrible thing. I can do this. I'll give them their $5. And it was a one-page form that I had to fill out and explain, you know, who I was ordained by and all this kind of thing. So I wasn't really comfortable doing it, but the couple wanted me to do their wedding, and I thought, okay, I can set aside, you know, my hatred of the government long enough to it's sort of like the Rosa Parks things. Yeah, sometimes you just go to the back of the bus and you ride it and you keep your mouth shut and you just do it. And so I kind of thought that way. I'll pay my $5.
Is that something you guys are you are referencing? Something you said earlier in the show,
yeah,
about Rosa Parks.
Yeah.
I missed it. Okay, because if you didn't, that certainly needs a follow up.
Yeah. So I thought, okay, this is not a big deal. I can fill out one piece of paper that tells who ordained me and the circumstances, and pay $5. I can set my conscience aside for that, and then. Once I sent them their little $5 and their form, it wasn't filled out exactly the way they wanted. Now, I answered every one of their questions honestly and completely, but one little thing wasn't exactly like they wanted. And that was it. That was the line that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I wouldn't function any further with them, so I had to go back to the couple.
Yeah, I got to interject here. When it costs $5 to have a yard sale in my town, and with a lot of things that the government does, they just want to cut. Like, you know, some places to get a concealed carry permit, like, you know, you have to pay like $75 or $100, but there's no test. They're not like certifying that you're safe or anything. They're just taking rent. But when they're just taking rent and it's something that's so low as $5, I have to think they might even be losing money being in that game, but they just want to be in everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna jump out here. You can answer the question to the airwaves. I'm going to go. I am needed elsewhere. Take care, brothers.
See you, Michael.
So, and I should clarify also.
You were going to.
What's that, Randy?
Go ahead.
So I should clarify also that the $5 was for me to be licensed in Ohio. The couple would still have to pay their $25 or $35 or whatever to register with the county that they were in. So, and it wasn't so much the $5. It was, I really didn't like having to answer as to who ordained me and what the circumstances were. And I was really uncomfortable with that.
So even then you had a sense that that was none of their business.
Exactly. And the second round, I just decided, you know, I'm not going to do it. And I went back and told the couple. I said, look, I'd be more than happy to have the ceremony, and we can go through every aspect of it. I'll sign, you know, separate documents. I'll write in your Bible if you want, or I'll give you I'll print out my own certificate and give it to you, the saying that I have done the service. But I'm not going to deal with the state of Ohio any further in the wedding thing. And so we went ahead and did the ceremony without government approval, and then they ended up going to a county seat and just, you know, going through the process at the county seat without me.
So you did it. You did it like the guy from Chicago.
But then when I was in Missouri and I did a wedding there just last summer, about a year ago right now, was when I was in Missouri, and it's so simple in that particular county that I was in Missouri that the wedding couple drops by the courthouse. They pay the $35 or whatever it is, and they get the paperwork packet, and they bring it to me. And when all I have to do is write my name twice on the paper, and that's all I had to do. And so, you know, it wasn't a thing big enough for me to cause a fuss about, so I did a state wedding. So I've done it both ways. I've done it when it was convenient to do it according to the state's laws, and then when it wasn't convenient, I did it anyway and broke the law. Now, this is all changed now, though, because I'm kind of inspired by this Orthodox minister in Chicago, and I'm thinking in my mind, yeah, I think that's the position. It's first off, it's the morally correct position, because government has no business being in the marriage business. It's simply not in their realm of authority. You know, that's in the, in, if you're an atheist, yeah, you shouldn't care what the government has to say about a wedding. That's between you and another person. If you care about your family, then, you know, and it should be a family decision, well, then it should be a family decision, not a government decision. And if you care about what a particular church believes, then that's between you and that church. It should have nothing whatsoever to do with what a bunch of dirty, stinking politicians have to say. You know,
that's right. Even if you are an atheist and didn't want for some reason to be married by a church or a minister, there should be a way to register your marriage if you wanted in the blockchain, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now there is
just like you can register other things like maybe stock ownership or websites or whatever.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted there.
Well, of course, and this is what Pat Buchanan refers to in his article, the government's first step to punish misbehavior on this kind of thing is probably going to be the loss of tax-exempt status for churches. Well, that's not going to affect me.
That'll hit you. That'll hit you pretty hard, right?
It's not going to affect me because I've never sought that.
You don't have a lot of tithes coming in.
No. No, and I really don't care. Even if I was setting up a brick and mortar type church, I would not seek tax exempt status, because that brings for a church, that brings with it such an array of nonsense that the church has to tolerate in order to get that tax exempt status. And I
churches are not allowed to say who you should vote for. But I wonder, I haven't ever looked it up, I wonder if you would be allowed to say, well, don't vote for any of them. That would violate your status as a tax-exempt organization.
Well, again, you know, that kind of goes to not only freedom of religion, but freedom of speech. If somebody believes that candidate A is a good guy and you should vote for him, and he says that from his pulpit, then why would the government have any business telling him he couldn't? But yet that's what they do. They'll threaten to take away your tax exempt status if you do that. But if we really believe in this freedom of speech thing, then how can the government stick its nose in there?
Yeah. Do you think that when you did not fill out the government form in, I think it was Ohio, do you think you're actually breaking the law?
I was, yeah. To actually do a ceremony in Ohio without that, it is, they actually warn that in the paperwork and so forth.
Well, let me ask you this, and you won't often have a Missouri lawyer asking you what Missouri law is, but do you recall if that was the law here? Because I don't know.
Missouri is very much county by county. The state itself doesn't get involved in the process. So in individual counties, it would vary, and it also depends on whether the county, I can't remember if it's the sheriff or some authority in the county gets to choose if they will enforce that or not.
I think it may be the recorder of deeds.
Oh, I believe you're right. I believe you're right.
Yeah. And which is logical, because the recorder of deeds, his job is to record important documents so that they'll be there when you want to see them later.
Yeah.
And in one sense, for a marriage, that's very appropriate. You know, you were talking about, whether an atheist would want, you know, some place where they could get married or something, or they wouldn't have, I mean, they could get married, but they wouldn't have any official document. It's very possible, though, that any two people entering into any relationship of any kind may want to document their agreement with a contract. And there may be reasons why they would want that to be recorded in some central place, like I mentioned, the blockchain. There is some legitimate purpose, you know, for having a recorded documents. It's obviously very, very apparent in land deeds, because it kind of is good to know who owns one piece of property.
Right. Right.
But I don't know. These things would somehow have to get hashed out, I suppose. But it should be up to the individuals that are contracting a marriage.
Yeah. Very much like setting up a corporation.
Yes. So,
you're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
So, Randy, we're wrapping up our show today, wrapping up the second hour and wrapping up the show. And I wanted to bring up a thing that I've been kicking around in my mind for a long time. You know, down here, I'm down in Alabama, and over here in eastern Alabama is the Mises Institute. They're near Auburn University. And there are quite a few real well-known people that live in Alabama that are associated with the, you know, liberty activities in one kind or another. You're a little north of us. You're way, way up there in the north in Missouri, but that's still considered the South. And we've got a lot of people in Texas. You know, there's a pretty good collection of liberty-minded folks in Austin, and there's even quite a few in Louisiana. Now, there's already an organization in North Carolina called the Blue Ridge. I believe it's called the Blue Ridge Mountain, Blue Ridge Liberty Project, or yeah, I think it's Blue Ridge Liberty Project. And they have a yearly thing, a yearly get-together, kind of like Porkfest, but much smaller. Of course, they're a much smaller organization. And I've been kicking around this idea that we need some kind of a central location in the South where we can sort of have a Porkfest South. And I don't want to rip off the Free State Project. Wouldn't necessarily have to call it Porkfest. You know, that might get into, that might hurt somebody's feelings. With it being the South, maybe we could actually call it, instead of Porcupine Freedom Fest, we could maybe call it Pork Fest, you know, because pulled pork is a big thing down here in the South, and barbecue of all
yes,
kinds.
Yes, it is.
Anyway,
I was just going to say, yeah, Texas has got a lot of libertarians, but, you know, you'd have to kind of figure out where you'd want to be. I do know that last summer there the Christian Libertarians started their first annual get together summer convention or whatever it is in Austin. You mentioned that, and I'm not sure how many people they had at last year, but I was thinking of making it this year, and that would be very interesting. They had a lot of things that were mostly interesting from a religion and libertarianism standpoint, and chiefly Christian, which would interest me. You know, that's kind of a thing that's happening in Texas. But you've got that whole spread from Texas all the way over to the Georgia coastline. Is there anybody in the world who has walked that earth better, sampling campgrounds and RV parks, than you, Ben?
I'm sure there's probably somebody.
Selecting locations. And another thing you need, though, it's a good point to make, is that there's no way, even if you had a good idea for this, Ben, and I think it's great, you couldn't do it alone. I couldn't do it alone. You don't want a healthy libertarian population. You'd want some organization to take the reins of it. You know, up in Michigan, we have the Midwest Peace and Liberty Festival that's in central Michigan, Delton, Michigan, that's coming up on the, is that the first? Not the first, the 7th and 8th of August. Actually, the Christian Libertarians in Austin are the 7th and 8th in August, and the Midwest Peace and Liberty Festival is the same date, 7th through 10th, I think, in Delton. And everybody listening to this should look that up on the internet and go. And I'm kind of, I might be able to go to one or the other, but I guess I can't go to both. Mm. Gee, that's a problem. Well, anyway, you want that. You've got kind of like North covered there. You've got the Pork Fest. It's got all of New England, plus they draw from everywhere, you know, up in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But in the South, there have to be some places. Now, one thing with the South, though, well, you don't want to do something like that outdoors in August, do you?
No. And actually, I was thinking like December might be a good time because it's comfortable down here in December. Or the spring.
Or spring break. I don't know.
Oh, you know what? Spring break. There's an idea.
Well, let's think about this.
Yeah. You know.
And maybe some listeners have some ideas like, I'd like to help with that. Let's do something.
You know, I wonder if we could get some kind of, some of the big shot Bitcoin people that might be interested in something like this to at least... You know, because these things make money. It's not entirely a money losing prospect.
Maybe you should look up MK down there in Pensacola.
Yeah.
See what she thinks.
Randy,
hear you, I believe.
It's been really great being on the show with you today.
Oh, Ben, thank you for the invite. Let's do it again.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for listening,
folks. This has been the Freedom Fiends. Thank you. And work. Yeah.